Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Paranormal Ride. We're here every Monday as we do what we do when we do. Welcome, welcome, my people. This is a show that's been in the making for the last thousands and thousands of years. Today's show is the Mayan Code. My people, mi gente, mi gente. It's a very, it feels like a homecoming right now. The show is all about my people, my culture, what we're about, what I'm about, how I think, why I think the way I think. It's complex, I know. There's a lot of moving parts. Sometimes people got to dodge them. As people know, this show is all about the paranormal and what, and kind of like, you know, all the topics that revolve around this topic. And it all comes to one, you know, kind of like, big path, you know, it's a huge path, not just, you know, a little tiny little alley, but it's huge where all this stuff converges into what is our current reality. And that's the way I'm interpreting it, because a lot of it, you know, the things that affect us are mostly the things we can't see and we can't touch and we can't smell. It's one of those things that are beyond our regular senses that drive us, that push us and make us do what we do in life. So that's pretty much the principles behind the show. And you know, it's a fun way to talk about topics you normally don't talk about at, you know, at school or at work with friends. You might be the weird one. Who knows? But whatever the reason is, you know, that you think about this is because it's affected you and you're not the weird one. You're the awoke one. You're the awakened one. If you want to call in, feel free. It's 646-564-9613, and it's paranormalride.com, and that's for Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all the social medias. It's there, and feel free to check out some of the artwork. It's mostly on the Instagram where you can see the artwork. It's also, I think, it's on all the pages, you know, but I think my Instagram has, it's clearly been for more art than anything, but feel free to comment on our, on all the social media sites. Thank you for retweeting, my people. I appreciate that so much. And the audience is getting bigger, so is the following. So I thank you, you know, for all the hundreds of people who are, you know, tuning in and checking out the posts and starting a conversation or sharing it. I really appreciate you so much that you do so. And, you know, pretty much the show is energized by your interest in what we're doing here and why we do it. That's why I do it. I love to do this because it's a conversation. I'm always thinking, I'm always pushing things. I am a risk taker, huge one. I don't really kind of stand by and let things just happen to me. I tend to really go for what I believe in versus it being like, something that, you know, is going to be, done to me. I tend to do it to it, whatever it is. But yeah, that's a lot of it, you know, and people are afraid to make, you know, make themselves look silly or, you know, they have this, weird, balance with their own social groups or upbringing, whatever it is that kind of puts them in this position where they feel like they have to, you know, kind of like shine for others versus shining for yourself. And, you know, that goes beyond, you know, not just your social, but also your personal growth and your development as a person, as a human, and what you give back to this world. It's crucial that you understand how to give back to that world, because if you don't, what tends to happen is that you kind of repeat the same little weird cycle of continuous malaise or continuous, you know, feeling inadequate or not fulfilled. And that's an ugly thing to kind of like kind of live through. You know, it's not like a thing that you can fix later on and be like, you know, I'm, you know, going to, you know, make these changes now. And by the time now is, all those things that could have been done are mostly you know, it becomes harder, you know. But, you know, it's like you kind of develop your own, like, hole. You're digging, you keep on digging, and next thing you don't know, it's harder to get out of that hole, right? It's just what I mean. It's attainable. You know, you'll get out of it eventually. But by the time you do, things have passed by you so fast that it's, you know, that's what fuels regret. That's what fuels the loss, and, you know, the lost dreams. And you can't do that to yourselves, people. So your motivation, hopefully, you know, this week would be to really, you know, look forward and look ahead to what your actions do and how you do things and how you go for things that are going to create a better life for you. And let's focus on that. So it's a harder thing to actually say or actually do, you know, but it's a start, and that's all you can do is just start. So today's show, as I mentioned, is the Mayan code. I decided on this show pretty late in the weekend, and just focusing on a lot of different things that are on my plate, which is how it should be, right? And you know, you should not say, I'm bored out of my mind, let me just waste time. That's not ever my case. I always have things that I'm juggling, which are good stuff and things that are going to help. Hopefully my mission is to help others. And when I meditate or I pray and stuff like that, that's what I pray for, is that I give, you know, whatever I'm doing, you know, more to others versus just for me. Because if it's just for me, it's just, that means I'm just feeding my ego, or I'm trying to impress others, or I'm trying to have others notice me, or whatever the confusion is, because it is a confusion. My focus is, how am I going to elevate somebody else, and how are they going to grow? Because, you know, I'm building, you know, myself, and others have to come with me and build as well. So that's the approach. That's the hope. So, you know, when I was planning this show kind of late, I, you know, was bumping into a lot of things about my culture, and it was coming up, and other cultures that I love as well. You know, I just recently came from Brazil, and it feels like it was just yesterday, but it was really almost a month ago that I was in the jungles of São Paulo. There's no jungles there, but it's a concrete jungle, right? And just, you know, really feeling the vibe and feeling the culture and feeling people's energy. And then, you know, understanding that there's a big, you know, it's an onion. It's a big, you know, there's so many layers of things that are going on there between, you know, poverty and society and people's positive energy. And their just want to live a happy life is, you know, it's all in there in just one big giant people soup. And, you know, one of the things that I realize is that, like, all this accumulated attitude, this positive attitude, this want to do good, to be good, is coming from a cosmic connection that we share with others, you know. And it started fueling my, you know, my thoughts of, you know, how, you know, the Maya were tuned with that. They were in tune with the universe, and how it pretty much guided them through their construction of their culture and belief systems and things that they created, you know, and the beautiful things they created, you know, and how they celebrated, you know, the sky and the stars and pretty much life. And, you know, there's a lot of stories of, you know, there were warlike, there were a lot of stories of, you know, sacrifice and all that stuff. But it was all done for the greater, created good, which is, you know, it's not good to sacrifice people. It's terrible. Don't do that. But I mean, it was meant for that purpose, is to, you know, to keep the universe kind of together. And they, you know, they usually did that with, sacrificing, royalty, because it was really royalty that they needed their blood to be able to appease the gods. And if he did, if they couldn't do that, then somehow the universe will unravel and things will not be, you know, it would spell doom for their culture and for themselves. And so it was a balance, right? So it's a balance of passion, a balance of life, where, you know, it's like life or death. And you know, a lot of times in life, you know, people kind of live in that balance, you know, life or death. What is it that, you know, what's going to get us, you know, past that? How are we going to eat? How are we going to survive? How are we going to be happy? You know, and there's so much things going on in this world right now. And it almost feels like the balance is off. And you know, we're trying to get through this and we're trying to, you know, get there. I can only be around people who bring me up and give me good energy and treat me with the energy that I deserve and the energy that the universe wants you to have. Because no matter what, you know, people say, oh, you know, people treat you bad, you know, they're going to have bad karma or whatever it is. That doesn't, you know, for me, you know, that is not even the any of my motivation ever, you know, to have people understand their karma. That has nothing to do with me. That's their personal thing. So let's just replace the word karma with, you know, building of bad energy. Let's just say that. You know, let's say you keep on doing negative things. You just build it. And next thing you know, you're that corrupted and you're that, you know, your energy is that, you know, that negative that when the time comes, when good energy is there, there's no way you can get past it unless you kind of like, you know, deal with that bad energy and, you know, convert it into a good one. And the only way you convert that into good energy is that you face your truths. You face the things that have taken away, you know, from yourself and, you know, pretty much anybody else, you know what I'm saying? And that's what you got to focus on is how are you really going to, you know, change your energy into something that's going to be, you know, a positive one, you know what I'm saying? A good one, you know, one that's, you know, that's in a good frequency with what the universe is asking you to do, you know? So, you know, I'm talking about this cosmic kind of like connection we have, you know, the Maya somehow had this cosmic connection way before any culture, way before anybody was developing complex systems. And I mean, the Mayas, I mean, they're pretty much, you know, known for their, you know, astrological kind of like, you know, documentation, you know, how they understood the heavens and the complex and the systems, you know, they were one of the first ancient people to develop a written language, a complex one with over 1,000 different type of glyphs that represented ideas and sounds, very much like, you know, the ancient Egyptians. But the Mayas had, you know, developed a written system where they would share this knowledge with everybody. Some of it was on the walls, you know, to talk about the history of the gods or their royals. But it was mostly a way to, you know, share their history and their culture. So they had that knowledge that they had to develop a language system. They also use extremely complex modern mathematical, methods that, even today, you know, like, you know, their concepts, their math and all the things that they developed pretty much, you know, match what we in our modern times, you know, used, to develop, you know, really, you know, complex machines and all these different systems that, are used to, you know, to create, you know, our modern science. You know, the Mayas were using a mathematical system that, you know, like I mentioned, that had something called the place value and zero, which a lot of ancient cultures weren't doing that. The Mayas were doing that thousands and thousands of years when most, you know, European cultures were in, you know, in the caves or so-called caves or in, you know, still in huts and stuff like that. The Mayans were long gone, when a lot of the, Eastern kind of culture started, you know, rising up. The Mayans were gone for thousands and thousands of years and had left all this in the jungles. And, you know, the big question is, where did they go? What happened to them? Why did they leave? You know, some people, you know, blame famine, weather, droughts, which I doubt. It's in the middle of a rainforest. And that's the hard part, too. You're building a civilization in a rainforest. The topsoil is kind of really weak. So to be able to maintain, you know, cities that had hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, it's such a complex system. You know, even they even had aqueducts, and they had, like, the system where they would bring water in, fresh water into the cities. It was, you know, it was way beyond any, you know, modern cultures, you know, current modern cultures, you know, engineering feats. You know, the Mayans had it all the way. They didn't use the wheel per se the way that, you know, the Western, you know, sorry, the Eastern world kind of used it. They used it in different methods. They didn't have, like, really steel stuff, you know, like metals that were used for that. They actually used gold a lot. They used flint and rocks and stuff like that. But, you know, imagine trying to chisel a rock, a glyph with just, you know, like you know, they had different type of metals. So what I'm trying to say is, like, that's what current cultures and archaeologists want you to believe, that that's, you know, they were just like, you know, they had no abilities. They, you know, they, how did they create? It's a complete mystery. It's not, you know, it's engineering. It's you know, this complex culture. But other people say they were helped, you know, just like a lot of people saying the pyramids weren't just built by regular people, which I think they were. But, you know, that the tools and the stuff that they use were just, like, you know, also stones, you know, and, like, primitive tools, and they weren't. I know they weren't. They couldn't have been. They had very complex, advanced technology to be able to produce what they do, because even in our time, if we wanted to build some of these mega structures, it would take so much money. It would bankrupt so many people. It would create such a you know, it would just never be feasible to construct anything like any of the things that were there. In the Mayan culture, there are more pyramids in the Mayan culture than there are in Egyptian cultures. Some of them are matching in size for the Egyptian ones in, you know, Giza and stuff like that. Maybe not in height, but in size and volume. Some of them are bigger than those because they were not built at that height. They were more spread out. So again, very, you know, fascinating things that, you know, looking at the Mayan people and how they did their things and why they did it, you know, and how is still, you know, like a big mystery, you know, for a lot of people. You know, I remember, you know, when I heard about the 2012 kind of like an end days apocalyptic kind of like thing that's going to happen in, you know, in on a Friday, December, you know, 21st, 2012, how that was like the day. It was it. That was the end. I remember reading a lot about the Mayans. And, you know, I was very lucky because I had, you know, family members who were, you know, who were attuned to a lot of the teachings and the readings. I remember seeing Mayan kind of like calendars and glyphs and like the creation stories around. And, you know, I think maybe when I was younger, I just wasn't that into it. And I just like didn't really understand it. As I kind of grew and understood it more, I was like, it was mesmerizing. I just had to like just jump into it and find out more. And what, you know, what it symbolizes, you know, this and day clock, it was just the turn, the end of the you know, the cycle, the Mayan long count, which is the Baktun, and it was going to you know, change into a new one. So the Mayan calendar is a complex supercomputer. And, you know, people just look at it, it's a stone, and they're like, oh, it's a stone. No, most people actually have the wrong calendar for the Mayan calendar. A lot of them have the actual Aztec calendar, thinking that's the Mayan ones. Don't get confused with that. So most of the, you know, when you look for calendars, you want to look for the Mayan long count calendar. And, you know, they also have the sacred calendar as well. And they use those calendars to be able to make those calculations. So let me just tell you how accurate this calendar actually was when you really look at it. So they say that the Mayans calendar, their long count one, think of it as like a odometer, you know, in your car, and you know how it, you know how it's ticking the days. That's kind of how the long count calendar worked, right? So, you know, so it would the long count calendar will start at one and then go two and three, and it goes all the way up to 144,000. And then once it hits that number, it's, you know, it's just called a one baktum. So after that, you know, the calendar restarts and then it goes back into the, you know, one, two, and that's how they did the measurement. So if you've never heard this before, it's because you're looking at the wrong calendar. So the long count calendar, you know, also measured these, you know, baktums as well. So far, you know, if you had a series of like 13 baktums, that would be totaling 5,125 years. So you can start seeing how complex this calendar was, you know, can how precise and complex it really is. So, you know, so as it's counting down, it's and it's doing its thing, you know, they were basing all these calculations on what they were recording in the sky, you know, in the heavens. And let me just give you one example of how they were doing this. Now, they were tracking the have everything in the heavens, which is bonkers. And I'm going to get into the actual, like, what is it that they were looking at, and what was the most sacred ones, which is the Pleiades system. And there's a whole mythology behind it, as a lot of people who are into ancient aliens and ancient astronaut theories. The Mayans had their gods descend from the Pleiades and then thus bringing humanity over to Earth. And that's one of the creations that I'll go over in after the break. But let me just explain to you how dedicated they were and how mind-boggling it was what they were doing. So, for example, let's say they were tracking Venus, right? Let's stick with the Pleiades system as the actual, like, and actually is one of the most beautifulest star clusters, and it's actually, people consider that like cradle of star creation. It's like coming from there. There's, you know, millions of stars in that constellation, but there's bright ones, and there's seven really bright ones. They call them the seven sisters, the Mayans did. Okay, so let me get back to it. So let's say you're looking at the Pleiades system, you know, let's say on one particular day. And then that particular day, you know, let's give it a day, May 3rd, okay? So let's just say that's the day that you're looking at it. So the Pleiades would start, you know, to rise, you know, in the sky, you know, little by little, you know, every year, you know? So check this out. So if you are standing in one position, right, and you're looking at the Pleiades, so it's going to take about 72 years for that star to be at the same exact spot that it was the day that you actually saw it. So think about that. So let's say on May 3rd, you look at the Pleiades. You're looking straight into like north, and it's right in front of you. The next day, it goes a little higher. The next day, it goes a little higher, and then a little higher, and a little higher. And it, you know, it starts making its precession up, and it goes all. That's what they call the precession. So it would take 72 years for that precession to go all the way back around and be at the same spot that you saw it on May 3rd. So as you can see, that's dedication. Mayan people are dedicated people. As Guatemalans is super dedicated to sticking it through. All right. So think about how crazy that is, you know. And as it goes along, you know, throughout the whole entire, kind of procession and all that stuff, in order for it to make it all the way around, you know, you would have to wait 26,000 years to be, you know, to go all the way around the whole Milky Way. You know what I'm saying? So it's crazy to think about it. I think, you know, this 26,000 years for it to actually, you know, be in the same spot again, you know, it's it's kind of nuts to start thinking about that. You know what I'm saying? To start thinking about the Mayan culture, is have they been around for 26,000 years? I don't know. People would question that, you know. All right, so I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk more about, you know, the Pleiades system and the kind of the mythology that comes with that, and how people believe that, you know, that, you know, the Mayans are not from this earth. They are from another galaxy, and we'll see where they're from. All right, folks, we'll be back. 646-564-9613. I should really memorize that number one day. I just can't. I always have it written down here somewhere so I can just bust it out if I need to. Paranormal Ride on Twitter, Facebook, and all your social media stuff. You can send messages, direct message me. Chat room's open. Go to blogtalkradio.com and type things up. Send me direct messages. You don't want to make it public. Who knows? You know, you guys, you might be a little shy, and that's okay. That's loud. I'm not shy. So I will be unshy for you. So if you have something to say, a comment, things, I will share that with the world. So welcome back, your host Marlon O, bottom of the hour, talking about the Mayans, the Mayan code, what's going on. Can we decipher the Mayan code? What happened to my people? Sheesh, I'm still around. I mean, I'm Mayan, but I definitely have my Spanish blood in there as well. From España, and you know, that thing happened. All right, so I was talking about this like a procession thing. Let me clarify a little bit because it's a really complex concept. But pretty much, you know, like I mentioned about the, you know, how the Pleiades will rise in the sky. You know, let's say I picked May 3rd, and once that hits there, you have to wait another 72 years for that. For the day that the Pleiades will rise, but it will rise one day earlier, you know, and then so on and so on. And then, it, you know, the next year, you have to wait another 72 years and it will rise a little, you know, earlier, a day earlier, you know. So it would be like on, you know, May 1st, 2nd, you know, that, you know, you have to wait 72 years for that thing to, you know, be, you know, come a little earlier. And then the next time will be May 1st and so on. And so 72 years, and then it for it to be back to where it was when you first saw it, it'll be 26,000 years. So imagine doing that with every single thing in the sky, because that's how it works. That's how our planet is rotating around the Milky Way galaxy, and it's doing what it's doing. And by the time it gets back to where it is, 26,000 years have gone by, and they did that with everything, all the planets, everything. They had it aligned, they had it, they mapped it all out, and it was their language. It was the way that they were able to then use it to predict things, as like 2012, and to predict weathers and things that they were going on in their society. And it was really crucial for them to keep this time, because it would mark when the gods would return. And I think that was their main like focus, and why they kept on trying to find out what it was. And, you know, so when 2012 broke, and, you know, the kind of the media caught on to it, and, you know, it's a big, you know, sensation, you know, like, you know, the end of the world, the Mayans have predicted this, you know, and I feel all this, you know, end times, doomsday kind of like, you know, thing that was, you know, that was just terrifying everybody. You know what I mean? I think when I heard about it, I was kind of rolled my eyes. I was like, come on, not again. But you know, I did one of those like moments where, you know, I put my hand on my chin. I was like, and I was like, maybe. No. I mean, but it was, it just made me think. I was like, wow, this was, you know, of all the things, you know, I'm very scientifically based, and, you know, I that's, you know, I tell people I tend to be, you know, a skeptic, and I tend to be very, like, practical. And it's just because of my training. You know, that's just the I grew up, you know, and, you know, being a, you know, so my schooling is engineering and science and, you know, technology and all that good stuff. And, you know, and that's kind of been my work. And, you know, I'm very technical and numbers, and it makes sense. I'm freaking Mayan, so I got to be good with numbers, I guess. But anyway, so when I thought about all the complications and these weren't coincidences. Like, these numbers weren't just popping out of nowhere. They were just like these precise numbers that were pretty much put together for thousands and thousands of years. You know, it just I was like, wait a second. You know, but anyway, so the Mayans, a lot of people thought that they could not possibly be able to develop these systems because, you know, it would take, you know, tens of thousands of years of observation, so just calculating this stuff. So, for example, they had, let me see. Let's go to Venus, another one, right? So let's say you're looking at Venus, and all the solar systems, in a precise way, it would take thousands and thousands of years to measure and to calculate and to map it out. So they had these observation towers that they would build, and with the observation towers, the kings and the priests and will observe the skies and be able to make predictions on what to do next, and if they should go to war or not, or what are the gods telling them? What are they interpreting? So solar eclipses for them were bonkers. Like, it was one of those things where the gods were descending, and then they would, if you appease them, the sun would come back, So, I mean, people would look at it and be like, hey, that's just like, religious and hokies, hocus pocus kind of thing. We know how the real sky works. But they knew when it was happening, right? So it was almost like a show to a lot of them, because they knew in 30 years the eclipse was going to happen. And they did whole entire complex, like these, things that they would prepare for those days. So just the fact that they knew when it was going to be, it's just nuts to think about how that is. I mean, we need computers to be able to calculate these things now and, through math and through time and, things gotten better. But the Mayans knew this thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, way before any culture was even looking and documenting and before there was any poetry or, any of these coliseums and, modern time. The Mayans had been done and had been gone from the earth, or disappeared, in quotes, as these civilizations started forming their culture, their poetry, their statues, the Mayans, that did that, done that, they were way past it. So 2012, man. So a lot of it, it was documented in temples. I think there was one temple that had really clear, I think it's in Palenque, where they had an inscription on the stone that mentioned this date. And the other place was on this inside. And this is the creepy like thing that I'm like, yo, I don't even know why they hid this. But in one of the temples, and it was pretty, it was an important temple. Inside of it, they had these tiles, right, with decorative tiles with glyphs on them, and some of them started falling off. It's thousands of years old, thousands, and as the archaeologists were doing research, documenting, taking things, and marking them and, taking pictures. One of the tiles that had fallen off, they noticed it had an inscription on it. And the inscription was, it talked about this date. So it confirmed the fact that that this inscription in Palenque, the site in Palenque, one of the temples, had this date. It was being confirmed somewhere else. But the peculiar thing about it was that the tile, had the inscription was in the inside. So when they put the tile in, the inscription would be facing in the wall. So you couldn't see it because there was something else on the outside, right? So it was like the flat part of the tile, where they put the stucco or whatever, not stucco, but whatever it is that they put to stick that tile on the wall, that's where the inscription was. It was in there. So it was hidden from the eye, regular eyes and public. So it was said that the king during that time didn't want the people to know the sacred knowledge, and so perhaps that's why they hid it. But they wanted somebody to know. They wanted it to be found at some point, and you know, we found it, and it confirmed it, you know, that, you know, this date was coming. So, and you know, they also, you know, they talked about in the Popol Vuh, and I talked about that, and the Popol Vuh is pretty much the book of, you know, that talks about the creation stories, and I think it's called the, you know, the Book of the People, or I think that's what it means. But it talks about the destruction of, you know, of the earth or the planet. But you know, a lot of people feel like that's interpreted incorrectly. It's more like the you know, something dies and then something comes back again. So there's all this like reinterpretation of, you know, or perspective of how our language talks about, you know, how their language has different concepts of belief systems on how they see the world. For example, you know, we tend to see the world in a very linear way, time progresses forward, right? So, you know, we make sure that we have a meeting at 8, we try to be there at 8, and we are looking forward to those dates. But the Mayans didn't think that way. They were more of a expansive kind of way, which were more, more like, think of it as not just one way, but actually all directions. So it was a different concept of how they perceive time, because they can make calculations in the past in thousands of years. And that's what they felt. That's how a lot of researchers believe that the Mayans were able to calculate the movements of all the stars and the planets in the way that they did, because they were able to make these projections that were in the past, and then calculate things. So the actual calendar start is in the billions, you know, and when you look at it, it's almost telling you the actual start date of Earth, which is even crazier. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, where are they getting all this knowledge? And that's where this ancient astronaut concept starts coming in. You know, a lot of people say that they were helped, that they had this knowledge that, you know, that was passed down to them, you know, through the serpent god. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, when they talk about the serpent god, it shows up in a lot of different cultures, which is another little peculiar thing about, you know, how a lot of cultures share common kind of stories throughout the, you know, the world. So Ku Klux Klan, and, you know, so the whole kind of like the serpent god, it's known as the giver of knowledge, information. So, you know, the mythology behind, you know, this ancient creature or this deity. So Ku Klux Klan, they, and I'm going to spell it for you because it's a really long name. So KUKULKAN. So just, you know, do a little search on your own. So according to the mythology, you know, it descended from the Pleiades system. And that's where you have this like concept of the Mayans coming in and being taught. So in the Mayan, you know, story of creation, it talks about how this god, Ku Klux Klan, was a descendant, you know, descended from the skies, and you know, it was living in the Mayan jungles, and you know, and it knew that you know, that it started interacting with you know, these seven the eight boys, and they had like different ages, and then, you know, it was from like, you know, 7 years old to like 12 years old, something like that. And they taught, you know, he taught these eight boys mathematics, astrology, you know, all kinds of, you know, different type of advanced you know, like sciences. So it was kind of like, you know, it was the bringer of knowledge. So you see that in other mythologies as well. You know, even if you're in the Christian book, you know, the snake in the Garden of Eden represents the devil. How the devil gave them, you know, like forbidden knowledge, that they knew they were naked, so they had to cover themselves, and that it was going to teach them something else. So that's another serpent story, and they're all over the place. All different, you know, cultures have a serpent god. You have the dragon as well, where, you know, this knowledge that comes from, you know, in Asian culture, you have it as well. So this serpent god that's winged, for the Mayans, was a very important deity, and it was supposed to return in Chichen Itza. You know, there's a temple which is in the northern part of Mexico. It's in the Yucatan Peninsula. Fun fact, the actual Yucatan Peninsula used to belong to Guatemala. It was sold off, you know, with treaties by corrupt politicians that sold that beautiful land off. That's where Cancun is. And so you have, you know, this Chichen Itza temple that has an actual, like, it's beautiful, but it's the temple, depending on how, you know, when it's, what position it's in, if it's in the winter solstice and the summer solstice, whatever it is, it casts a shadow. So the shadow actually is being cast, gives it the illusion that the serpent god, Kukulcan, is traveling down and up into the heaven. It's amazing. There's videos of it. It's just beautiful. You can see, like, the actual, like, the back of the patterns of the snake, and then you can see it traveling down into the head, and that's just awesome. So if you guys can, you know, just YouTube that, check it out. It's really dope. But just, you know, it talks about these stories, how these, you know, ancients came from the heavens and gave them knowledge. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's the thing that's fueled all this, like, you know, Mayans being extraterrestrials, I'm going to say it. Like, that's what they believe, you know, they are. And eventually, at some point, they went back. People say that's why we can't find them. We can't see them because they eventually all, you know, the gods came and took them. I mean, it's a bizarre, you know, thing to actually kind of like to not believe, if you believe what I just said. Because think about this, like, there's like this advanced culture that had sophisticated, you know, teaching methods and knowledge, and they were really enlightened people. I mean, minus, of course, the sacrifice, that's not cool. But it's like, you know, they kind of live in a different kind of like way, you know. And so for them to disappear completely out of the blue, and, you know, by the time, you know, the conquistadors came and, you know, they started doing the conquest things, the Mayans went around. They just, you know, they were just already legend. You know, they, you know, and they were talked about. They're just these little small nomadic little, like, indigenous people that were living in different parts of the temples, not where the temples were, but the peripherals of this gigantic kind of like jungle. And, you know, they would bump into these little tribes of, you know, people that would still have these legends and stories of the Mayas and who they were and the kings and the gods and all that stuff. It was just like, you know, to them it was bizarre because they didn't see these, none of these guys got to see the temples. But if you were like, you know, but, you know, they, when they went to Mexico, they did get to see, you know, they got to see the city of the gods as well, and they got to see all these temples. So the Mayans stuff was buried in, you know, beneath jungles, you know, and one of the most sacred ones was the temples in Tikal. So Tikal is one of those, you know, that's in the Petén jungle, which is kind of the central part of Guatemala. It's just so dense. It's so amazing. If you're able to visit Guatemala, you should go to the Petén to go look at the Tikal temples. Tikal temples is the it's just amazing because it's really the actual city is a mirror, a reflection of the Pleiades. So nowhere else, you know, in the Mayan Empire did they build a whole entire capital city, and that was the capital city where they were mirroring what was seen. So it was pointing towards the Pleiades, you know, where it was beckoning the gods to come back, you know, and some say they did, and that's why they abandoned the city. It's beautiful. It's a fascinating thing. You know, and I think that once people start discovering it more and more, you know, there's more ancient knowledge that kind of, you know, kind of comes up, you know, that starts to become known. And I think as we become more aware of it, we just become better people, you know. And, you know, that's, I think that's the purpose. That's the real reason, you know, we do anything, I hope, you know, if you're trying to just do things just for the ego, again, you're going to lose every single time. So, all right, so let me go back to this, you know, Chichen Itza, and, you know, I just love Chichen Itza. It sounds kind of cool. In that beautiful city, northern part of, it's in the Yucatan Peninsula, like I mentioned, they have this thing called El Caracol, which is pretty much means like, what's that? Like a conch shell or something like that, or I think, or like snail. I can't remember the translation, but anyways, it's a celestial observation tower, and they believe it was built in the 10th century. So the Mayan built it to again observe the sky, and in this observation tower, it looks like a like the modern observation towers that we see now with telescopes. It has that like that. That like dome shaped look, it looks just like it. It's pretty awesome. So, you know, in this place they had they had like these four doors, you know, at the bottom of the observation, you know, and then they had two in the top. But you know, a lot of them that actually are still there because some of them have fallen off, right? So you know, these things have these T shaped like windows, and a lot of archaeologists don't understand why they're shaped that way. They just don't. But these things were looking into the heavens, the stars, the moons, the eclipses, all these good stuff, right? To be able to calculate, you know, what's going to happen next. But you know, the story of you know, the Mayas descending from the heavens is another story that's even spoken about in the Cherokee Indians, the Aztecs. They all have the same story. So what is it they're really saying? What is it that they're exploring and witnessing, you know, that affected them, you know? So in one of these, you know, like amazing kind of like, you know, like Mayan temples, they actually found this amazing hieroglyphs, which I'm going to talk about in the next coming half hour of Lord Pakal. So Lord Pakal was he was a very influential Mayan king, and he ruled, I think, for like 70 years, I think, right? So just imagine how long this dude lived. I mean, I think he started when he was super young, but they had long lives. You know, they lived well. They were warriors, and you know, I guess you know they didn't have McDonald's back then, so I'm pretty sure they can, you know, they kept a good diet, and they were, you know, definitely warring. But anyway, so. I'll talk about that when I come back and give you more information about this Lord Pakal. And interesting enough, his tomb had this amazing hieroglyphs that some would say is a representation of a rocket ship going into the heavens. So if you during break, you might want to look at that picture. It's Pakal, so it's P-A-K-A-L. Pakal, Lord Pakal Mayan, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's like this complex machine that Lord Pakal is in, and it's going to, you know, go into the heavens. But the things that they discovered in the temple, just give you these like these images of, you know, there was more than just, you know, what we, you know, the Mayan mystery is more complex than we can ever imagine. So, you know, when I come back, I'll talk more about that. I'm actually amped about that because he's one of my my favorite kind of Mayan kings that are out there. All right, folks, we'll be back. We just going to take a quick break, and then at the top of the hour, we're going to go into that and, you know, try to wrap up the show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. You guys are awesome. On a Monday at 7 to 8:30, that's our new time. Later. Heard Luna, one of my favorite songs. Let me see. Actually, the artist that sings that, oh man, Zoe. Zoe is the bomb diggity. I love Zoe. And earlier you heard Hotel California, and of course they are the Eagles, and it's a good song. I remember when I told somebody that they're talking about a ghost, they were like, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, I'm talking about a ghost. It's haunting them at the Hotel California. All right. Well, folks, today's show is all about the Mayan Code. I am broadcasting live from good old Beantown. So if you are a Patriots fan, and that I am, they're going to play against the Miami Dolphins today. Sorry, fishes, you ain't going to win. Technically, they're mammals, but we call them fishes up here because that's how disrespectful we are. Damn. Sorry about that. Sorry about that, Dolphin fans. Guys, fishes to us. It was a song called Squish the Fish back in the days, and it's during Super Bowl era times, and we still play it just to be jerks. Not all of us in New England are jerks, remember that. I'm a nice guy, but when it comes to football, I'm not. Which is okay. It's all right, no worries. We're all winners in this camp. No, we're not. No, I'm kidding. I love my Floridians. You guys are awesome. Keep on tuning in. You guys are awesome. And actually, let me give some shout outs to my Florida people that are keeping the show in their corazones. So I love that. Thank you so much. Definitely shout outs to people around the globe. Brazil, obrigado for checking in with us. Canada, good looks. In Deutschland, Donka, UK, what's up, Italia, as well, you know, tuning in, thank you so much, and all across the US of A, man, you guys are everywhere, you guys come from all over the place, I forgot Essen, in Deutschland, Donka, again, you guys are awesome over there, I remember back in the days, I mean, way back in the days, I should date myself right now, but back in the 90s, I remember when there was no such thing as FaceTime. We used to use another web software that would allow us to talk about, a lot of the stuff that we do now, but I was talking to some folks in Essen, Germany, which is Deutschland, of course. Anyway, so shout outs to them, man. You guys are the best over there. Anyway, so let me get back to the Mayans and Palenque, the homie Palenque. The dude, you know, this guy is riding straight up a rocket ship. Have you had time to go look at it? Go online and check it out. So Flycatch, what up? It's popping. So the Mayan civilization is tied to Anunnaki. You know something? I'm going to say, why not? I would say there's such similarities on how... You know, especially when, you know, Nibiru was, you know, coming through, and they talked about, you know, a lot of, the Mesopotamian people, they had this, like, the concept of them coming down from, from the skies again, and then seeding humanity. And, of course, in the Anunnaki's case, they were the ones that were engineering humans to mine gold for their planet that had depleted its atmosphere, and they needed that to bring it back. But again, it's very interesting. And who knows? They might be talking about the same people. It might be the Mayans that they had created. And it's funny because even in the story, the Anunnaki's, their whole entire story of creation, there is a story that talks about how they were created by clay. Humans were created by clay, one of the first iterations. And in the Mayan Popol Vuh, it has the same exact story. Surprises, they were created by clay as well. And then, of course, the Anunnaki talks about the Great Flood and how, you know, the gods were mad because, you know, it was all wrong, humans, you know, they shouldn't have done it. And Enki was one of the Anunnaki gods that betrayed them and showed one of their humans to create a boat, and then it would save humanity. And then, similar to the Noah story in the Torah, but in the Mayan story, there's also a great flood that happens that destroys all humanity because the gods again were not happy the way that they were being worshipped. So yes, Flycatch, I think we might be talking about the same people, you know. As we discover more and more, so great question. But send more questions. I'm here all the time to answer them. I hope that helped. All right, so let me talk about Lord Pakal, King Pakal. He was discovered by a Mexican-French archaeologist, Alberto, and he was found in the ancient Mayan city of Palenque. And it said that he had ruled between 615 to 683. And the whole entire thing, you know, that when they found, you know, his tomb, it, you know, the way they found this tomb, they had to dig deep and deep to find it. You know, it wasn't like, you know, they had gone in there and you know, they had what's the word? They had a you know, opened it like a seal, and then the seal revealed, you know, the tomb. They had to dig deep. You know, there were these small rubbles and stones and dirt, and they had to go deep until they found the staircase that led into the tomb. And then when they got to the tomb, they found this amazing big slab. And in the slab, it had this hieroglyph that had the depiction of Lord Pakal chilling in something that looked like a rocket ship. It's nuts. So in the giant sarcophagus lid is what, you know, a lot of, you know, ancient astronaut people talk about, how it's proof that, you know, that perhaps Lord Pakal wasn't human. It was, you know, and it's all Mayan gods and even Egyptian gods and even Mesopotamian gods. They all say that they're all descended from the gods. They're all from the heavens. They're all, so the possibility, even when we talk about, you know, the Mayans, you know, coming from the stars, you know, there's this constant story by all, you know, types of the kings that they're descendants of deities. I think Flycatch has another good one too, that, you know, the four races, the planets only, you know, it says here that there are four races on this planet, only the blacks and the natives, I think. So when I see that, right, check this out. So in the Mayan, you know, and I think there's, you know, you're talking about the tribes as well, you know, there's talks about all these different types of, like, you know, mixture of cultures and stuff like that, you know. So the Olmecs are, they actually believe that they predated the Mayans, and they find these giant Olmec heads. If you looked at them, they looked exactly that. They look like they're from Africa, you know. So what are these giant heads? And I think they found seven of them inside, like, the northern part. I think Tabasco area in Mexico. So you have, you know, this depiction of this giant head that looks very much African American, you know, and of course in that region, you know, you have natives. So you have all this, like, you know, interesting kind of different, like, you know, cultural mixes that could have been happening inside that region, that it could have been where things kind of got started. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you just got to look at it. You got to, you know, you got to do your own research. I always recommend people, you know, I would bring the data. It's up to you guys to take it to a different level and share the information, you know, go check it out. But anyway, so a lot of these mainstream scholars talk about, you know, how King Pakal, you know, on his journey to the underworld, you know, he had to have a mechanism, a vehicle. And it's also like in the ancient, you know, Egyptian story of, you know, they had to get on the boat, and, you know, they had the book of, you know, the book of the dead that guides them, you know, throughout the underworld so they can make it to the other side. So Lord Pakal was no different. They're actually found in that area. They found these amazing, like, different, you know, like, stories and glyphs and gold and precious kind of like different types of relics. And one of the Lorpa calls his actual, like, he had like a mask on, a jade mask. And it had like, it was, it's so amazing. It's like a whole entire, like, it's like a shield almost that he has on. But, you know, it was kind of his protection throughout the underworld, which, again, another thing. But if people looked at this hieroglyphs and Celtic glyphs on the sarcophagus tomb, and it's this huge slab, you can see like his hands are configured in a certain way that it looks like he's holding controls, and his feet are not like placed flat, or they're like complex, like, you know, like depiction of feet putting his foot on to be levers or pedals. Really awesome stuff. And at the bottom of it, it looks like there's flames coming out of like the base and the chair that he's sitting on. I mean, you got to look at it. It's I'm gonna see if I can post it on our Facebook page, which I'm about to do in a couple of minutes, so you guys can kind of see what I'm talking about, because it's like one of those things you don't need your imagination to be like, is that a rocket ship? I mean, you can just tell what it is just by looking at it. You know, it's cosmic. I'm gonna see if I can find it and post it for y'all, because a lot of people are asking me about that and what it looks like, and I was trying to find just the right thing. Anyway, so in this position that he's sitting down in, Lorpa Call also seems to be has this mechanism, this machine that's attached to his nose. It almost looks like a breathing apparatus that's helping it him breathe. So as peculiar as that, you know, even that sound, you know, but it that's what it looks like. It looks like technology. It looks just like a machine. And, you know, again, I wish that, we had a chance to all kind of look at things at the same time. But I'll post it, you know, when the day kind of ends and stuff like that. So the temple was also built in, like, levels. So the whole temple was built around this, this sarcophagus. And, again, it tells you more stories of how the gods were coming and how he needed to have this contraption. So there you go. The show is quickly coming to an end. So thank you for everybody who's been tuning in since 7. The show is going to be running from 7 to 8:30 on Mondays. So definitely it's a change from what we used to have last season. This season I decided to change it a little more to give people a little more chance to have a good night. And if you're in the West Coast, it's a little earlier. You guys are 3 hours earlier. So it's about, what is it, 5 right now over there? About 5:13. So, you know, one of those, you know, things that, you know, a lot of the stuff that we talk about in the show is to get you guys into that mode of asking questions in this world. It's not just what's fed to you in the normal kind of historical, you know, documents and books that, you know, we're taught a certain way to depending on the region that you live at, right? If you have a Western culture, that's the, you know, you learn more about European culture. If you're like in the Eastern, you have more of that. So on, and, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere, it's all different, you know, depending on where you're coming from. But, you know, my mom used to tell me stories when she was little of learning all about the Mayans and all about their culture, the language, the temples, you know, all across, you know, the beautiful lands of Guatemala, and, you know, how they became, where they came from, the indigenous tribes, the language of Quiche, you know, that's still actually alive, which is fascinating to me that the language still exists now after all this time. It's still a spoken language. Again, the natives speak it more than anything, but, you know, so I have more examples of, you know, all the different things that, you know, as you explore more of the Mayan things, that tells you the same story that we do not come from here. We are not from Earth. We are from the stars. And it's a story that's shared across many, many cultures, not just the Mayans, as I spoke before. You know, we have this like shared passion for the sky, for the stars. We all look, who hasn't looked at the moon? Who hasn't wondered, you know, what's beyond that? Who hasn't looked into the sky or at the sunset and wonder what else is there? We are stargazers. We are looking into the skies. We wonder all the time, where do we belong in this gigantic planet, this galaxy, this existence, where we're traveling this little tiny little rock that's going through space and that's being gravitationally pulled by our sun, that's then rotating around the Milky Way galaxy, which then in turn the Milky Way galaxy is rotating around another source of energy that's then merging with other galaxies. And it can go on and on. I can go, we can go nuts, but we all think about it. At some point we are looking out there, we're asking questions, we want to know more, you know, and we all have like this little hunch that we're not from here, you know, as, you know, we talk about, you know, the missing link, you know, how did the humans evolve from, you know, a slug that then eventually millions of years popped up little feet and then vertebrate, and, you know, the Darwin theories and stuff like that, which one I don't really buy. I could see scientifically why we go that route, because, you know, it's too bizarre to think that we're not from this planet. Have you ever seen the movie Prometheus? Go check it out if you haven't. That's kind of where I'm going. That's actually, I think Prometheus, you know, was inspired by the Anunnaki story. That's pretty much it. And it, again, it follows every single other mythology. The Mayans are no different. You know, the story of the creation is that, you know, we came, we were seeded, that we popped out of corn, like corn from maize. As all we know as well, corn it has to be cultivated. It can't grow on its own if it's not cultivated by humans. It doesn't grow. So another bizarre thing as well, we have corn everywhere. So the Mayans revere corn. The Native Americans revere corn. A lot of different, like, you know, again, symbolism. It's, we were seeded. Something came. Something put us here, and we grew out of it. And that's what the Mayan creation story is about. Go check it out. It's a dope story. It's one of those that, you know, when I hear it, I know what's going on. I feel what's happening. So were we, were the Mayans, you know, one of those, as like a lot of like Anunnaki talk about engineering humans, were Mayans also engineered? Were we then created, my people created, and then in turn shared knowledge? There's so much to know. There's so much to explore. I think that we are getting closer. I think we're getting more awake. But like I said, you know, there's something about the stars that every culture is looking at, everybody's looking at, and why. That's the big question, is why. And I think we all know inside why. I think we have that answer. I think we're too dogmatic. We're too afraid of, you know, what people would think if we were to go different routes. I think, you know, I was looking at stats, and the stats say, you know, a great majority of people believe that there are UFOs out there, you know, but I don't know if it's gotten to the parts that says where we seated and, you know, humanity was brought here. I don't think we've gotten that far yet or comfortable with that concept. But if you're native, you are. You know, that's exactly what all creation stories are from. That is that, you know, the star people, the natives talk about, you know, the star people coming and, you know, bringing humanity. It's all the same stories. I just think it's told differently, because remember, all our history used to be verbal. Our storytelling capabilities were kind of ended at the point that we started writing it down, you know, or it helped keep a formulated kind of like consistent story. But because stories are not just what's written, it's also this hidden knowledge underneath every true every story that you read, because there's metaphors and there's larger kind of like stories that then tell and speak about your own humanity, you know. So a lot of these creation stories did that. They, you know, as they were told and retold and reshaped, and the listener will then make story their own, because that's what was more interesting to them. We reshape things, but it's also the same story, but in different lights, you know, in different ways. But it's funny that all these stories across the world follow the same story, you know, floods, clay, you know, engineering, seeded, you know, corn, you know, like, you know, all these like stories, they all are saying the same exact thing. So all right, folks, I had fun today. So thank you so much for tuning in to the show and me wrapping up. Again, the Mayan code is something that is hard to decipher. I think there's a lot more that needs to be kind of looked at, and we're just scratching the surface. Even when you look at, I just talked about Palenque, where Lord Pakal is. Even just that, you know, that's in Guatemala, and it's like the northern borders of Mexico and Guatemala, right? The kind of seats there. But, you know, when you look at it, you know, there's only like 10% of that has been kind of like uncovered. There's so much more, and there's more temples that are in the jungles that nobody has found. I think that was the Western temple. The Mayans talked about the four cardinal directions, and, you know, the Mayans were all about what the stars were telling you, so you would create things based on that. Like I said, Tikal is based on the Seven Sisters, and other temples are in alignment with those star constellations, so it means something. It might even mean the whole Mayan empire was built off the skies and the stars, and depending on how they were placed is what would trigger that, you know, that coming down from the heavens, the gods will be able to find us, right? So we're discovering more. We're kind of getting there. I think we're, as people, you know, we are slowly becoming more aware of all these metaphors, all these stories, you know. I think, you know, right now I'm going to look at the chat room. So I think Flycatch is on fire right now. He's talking about how the Garden of Eden is, you know, could be nothing more than genetic laboratory. Like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, these creation stories, these were all verbal stories, the things that were shared, you know, as we go on and on. But all of them have meanings, you know, behind it. Every story that you tell your friends, your family, you know, we've all done this. Like, you know, even if we, you know, we hear a story, we go back and tell the story, and you know it's different. But it's coming from your perspective, your angle, but it's always the same spirit, the same story that's telling you the same thing, but in different ways. And I think, you know, if you think about how the Mayan story talks about the creation, you know, they also had an Eden, just like you would have it in all the stories. They have, it's everywhere, you know, where things kind of were, which the gods experimented, the Mayan gods experimented on humans. There was so many iterations. They were the first ones with the stick people, and then that didn't work out. And then they had the monkeys, you know, and then they, you know, they didn't work out. Like, the people within, you know, the hollow monkeys in the temples, you know, talk about that story, how they, you know, they escaped, and then they went into the jungle. They were tricksters, right? So, you know, the clay people, the, you know, and then the humans came from mud. And so, you know, all of these stories are saying the same thing. I love it. You know, I think we're almost there. I think we're little by little, as people, we look at each other and we just, like, I hope we stop seeing colors. I hope we stop seeing races. I think we just start looking at our energy, start looking at our humanity more. Know that we're all sharing the same juice, same primordial ooze of engineered whatever we are, you know. And I think we're all beckoning, and we're all looking for the same exact thing, you know. Most of us are, you know, not there yet, and I think that some people, you know, would lean more towards materialistic things and less, you know, into what helps you grow into a person. And, you know, some people would dive more into the ego, and, you know, and then, you know, if you dive into that, then, you know, it's hard for you to then look at other things in life and grow, because you're so attached to what other people think, you know. So I think little by little we're getting there, and I think you just have to be open and aware, and not be afraid to ask those questions, my folks. So, all right, I'm going to wrap up the show with saying thank you. Next week, I'm not going to post just yet what the show is going to be about. I think I've been having these, like, little weird, like, thematic kind of, like, back-to-back inspirational things that kind of pop up. So I don't want to just, like, say this is it, but I will post it in the coming week. Let me just tell you what we've done so far. If you haven't had time to check out the show recently, there's so much that you guys can go back and check out. All you have to do is go to blogtalkradio.com and look for Paranormal Ride, and, you know, all the shows are free. You can listen to it. So I just talked about some of these, but some of our shows with the moon, the great flood, death, superstition, Marian apparitions, miracles, Bigfoot, curses and bad luck, fate and destiny, the nine, Planet X. So if you're into it, that was on August 14th, I believe. Twin flames, Akashic records, synchronicity, Harp Magic, Ouija Boards, which is one of my favorite shows. Don't do the Ouija board. Sheesh. Zombies, Halloween, The Afterlife, Kundun Blah, which is kind of a voodoo thing, Universal Consciousness, and Prometheus Flame, Sixth Sense, and Today's the Mind Code. And there's so many. It's our second season. I think we're on episode 56. So if you've been listening for a while, thank you. And I'm glad you guys are tuning in. There's so much more. ParanormalRide.com on Facebook, Twitter. Join me in conversations. Feel free. Conversations. Thanks, you know, podcast for throwing some knowledge out there. Appreciate that. I know, you know, there's so much that we can cover. And I'm going to, you know, your suggestions, the things you talk about in the chat room, the message you send me is what kind of helps me decide what the shows are going to be about. And, you know, I really enjoy, you know, a lot of the stuff that you guys throw at me. I think it challenges me, and that's kind of what I need as a person, is to be challenged. And if you're not challenged, you never grow, and you can never be anywhere but unevolved. There's no pun intended there. You know, I feel we're engineered. All right, folks, I got to go. Peace out, my people. I'm going to leave you with some, you know, Frank Sinatra. I kind of like that. You know, we'll see. All right, my peeps, peace out.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars, and let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you. Let me sing forever.